Hello, I'm Peter Taylor from Halifax Society for the Blind, and I'm joined here at our new Southgate premises by Ed Worrell, who is a solicitor with Finn Gledhill, who specialises in trusts and estates. So, thanks very much for coming, Ed. Can you give us a little bit about information about your role and some of the kind of things you get involved in?
Yes, no problem, and thanks for inviting me down today. So, as you say, I'm a solicitor working at Finn Gledhill. Work around wills, also probate, dealing with estates for people that have passed away, and also some other things which go with that, such as trusts which arise from wills and things that people create during lifetime, and also powers of attorney and issues surrounding people losing capacity to deal with their own affairs.
Yeah.
Wills are a very ancient thing in this country. They've been around since goodness knows when, I suppose, medieval times. But the idea behind them is that it's a statement that's binding after you've died, which can be simple, and can simple in its effect, but there's some very, very clear rules you have to follow for it to be valid. And there's nothing worse than a document which is trying to do something and fails on a technicality.
Right.
So I would say it, I guess, but a professionally drawn document, whether by me or somebody like me, gives you certainty that what you're trying to do will happen. That's the point.
I mean, I've noticed you can buy these forms, can't you, from the post office. Do people do those?
They do, and I do see them. I do see homemade wills. The problem is that it's a technical document. It's there to do a technical purpose, to achieve certainty about what somebody meant and to ensure it goes where it should go in terms of somebody's estate. Home kits can be good for very, very simple things if you follow the rules it sets out very, very carefully. But like any technical job, it's easy to get it wrong if you don't have expertise.
Yeah.
And a professionally drawn will is not a complex thing to do. It's usually quite quick. You'll get expert advice, of course, in doing so. And hopefully, you know, you're going to get a clear document doing exactly what it needs to do. Homemade wills, you've got to get it right. That's the problem. If it was any other kind of issue, maybe you get a second chance, but of course you won't with a will.
No.
And that's why these kits sometimes can be dangerous, because people get a false sense of assurance.
Right.
But when it actually comes to the time of them being used, there can be unknown problems, and it can cause a lot of problems in reality.
Do people have to know how much they're worth before they make a will, or what? How does it work?
Yeah, so the kind of process I go through with somebody is to understand about their family, what's their situation, who is there in their life they're wanting to benefit, whether it's friends, family or charities, and also look at the assets and liabilities that person has at that time. They're going to change in the future, but if you're going to make some decision about how to divide something, you've got to work on what you know now, and that gives you an idea about what half of your estate may be, for example. You've got to have some start point, but recognise it will change. And inevitably with wills, if you have big changes in your life, financial changes, for example, that's something which would mean you'd have to come back to the will just to make sure it's still doing the right job.
Right. And what about, as you say, family changes? I mean, myself, we made our wills perhaps about 10 years ago, and we haven't looked at them since then, but we've now got a grandchild. Mm. And I'm thinking, do I need to redo my will because might want to put him in?
I think that's a good point, and I think this is why we look at somebody's family situation. You try and understand what somebody would like the will to do initially, but recognise there may be things changing. For example, children may die before you, and then you'd want to pass it on to grandchildren instead.
Yeah.
So we'd ask these kinds of questions to try and look at obvious things that may happen, and the will would usually be constructed to provide alternatives if something happened that you'd foresaw, like losing a child. What would you want to do instead? I would ask that question of somebody to look at that kind of issue.
Right. When I think about wills, I think of money. But, of course, what do you do? If somebody has a house, is that then sold? Or can you leave, say, I want to leave that painting of my mother-in-law's dog to my son or whatever? Can you specify separate things? How does it work?
Yes, I think the one thing you can't do is leave somebody your debts. Much as people might like to sometimes, that's not really possible. But when it comes to wills, there are three kind of main ways in which you would leave gifts. One is physical things, like a painting, for example, you'd want to go to a particular person. Set sums of money that you'd want to leave to somebody, such as £1,000 to a charity, for example. That's a fixed amount. But when you've dealt with things which you want to mention specifically, you would have the rest of your estate. And that's often the bigger part of it, what we would call residue in will drafting. And at that point, you would think about dividing that in fractions or percentages.
Right.
Because you don't actually know how much it's going to be. Because things will change.
How do you know you've covered everything, though? Because I'm sure, you must be able to say, well, there's some weird things that people have left.
Obviously, it's all confidential. I think people have as varied a will as they have a varied life. So it can be very, very interesting what they want to do. And very personal to them,
yeah.
Which, of course, is the point.
Yeah, yeah.
I think what I would look to try and do is understand what somebody's intentions were, somebody's real wishes, and try and make sure the will does that as much as it can do. There are limits as to what you can do. As I said about debts earlier,
yeah.
You can't leave those to people. But you can be very specific and you can be quite detailed in what you want. I think when it comes to dealing with somebody's estate, that's where it does get really, really interesting, because you may say you want to leave your estate to somebody, but what that estate is could be varied, and we've had everything from farms to gold coins, shotguns, sheepdogs, anything you can think of.
Yeah.
We've had to deal with it and make sure it gets to the right place. That's the other side of making a will, is making sure it actually gets put through.
People have to appoint an executor, don't they?
Yes, that's one of the key things a will would do.
It
appoints a person or a group of people who would take over the deceased person's assets. That's their legal position. And they would have the responsibility of identifying all of those assets, making sure any debts are settled, any taxes paid, if that's relevant, and then making sure the terms of the will are carried out so the right things go to the right people as the will sets out. That's their legal responsibility.
Right. Because I come across people who say, I've nobody to act as my executor. What do I do? I mean, what happens in that case?
Yes, I mean, that is difficult. It has to be somebody who you trust, of course, to do that job, and it has to be somebody probably with a good dose of common sense. I think that's the biggest qualification. But sometimes there aren't those people, and my experience in practice over the last 30 years or so is that sometimes you would have professional executors, such as accountants or solicitors, who are there if you need them, either because there is nobody or nobody you want to appoint, which sometimes is the case.
Right. So would you go down to the detail of arranging someone's funeral if they didn't have anybody to do that for them?
Yeah, I was doing that just this last week.
Really?
And registering the death.
Yeah.
And dealing with house clearance and all sorts of things. Everything that needs to be done.
Yeah. You mentioned about a lasting power of attorney, and I think that's been sort of in the news over the last few years, really.
Hmm.
Just tell us how that works.
Yeah, so lasting powers of attorney are things which have been around since about late 2008. They become active, or 2007. I always forget without looking up exactly. But it came from the Mental Capacity Act 2005, and it was a whole range of issues that were resolved through a new Act of Parliament, which collected together a bunch of different things. And one of the things it created was lasting powers of attorney. And these are power of attorney documents, which I'll come back to in a moment, but they were designed to last beyond the point where somebody lost capacity to make decisions for themselves. Normally with a power of attorney document, you're delegating authority to somebody else to do things that you can do.
Right.
But you tell them what they're going to go and do. They act as a proxy for you if you can't be there. But if you lack capacity to make a decision for yourself, you can't instruct your attorney. So these things were created specifically to deal with that problem by creating the architecture in the legislation so that attorneys would then start making decisions for somebody and would then act in that person's best interests, which is an ethical test which is applied, to do whatever was necessary, really. And they were split into two types, one relating to financial matters, which pretty much speaks for itself. It's somebody's income, assets, property, management of investments, that sort of thing. And separately, issues to do with health and care, which would be, if somebody's lost capacity, but only in that situation, any work that was required regarding planning somebody's care in the care system and review of care plans. And also it can extend to giving consent or withdrawing consent for medical treatment. And in those situations, the attorney would act in that particular decision as if they were the person concerned.
Right.
So they would give a consent to a doctor, for example, or withdraw it as if they were the patient. So it's designed to put people who were next of kin or family members in a stronger position to advocate for somebody, or for somebody creating it to override the next of kin and appoint somebody completely independent rather than have their family do it for them by default and say, well, no, this is the person you must deal with.
Yeah.
And they would take over that power. Yeah. So they were designed to be flexible. They can be restricted. You can have a number of different ways they can work. You can have groups of people working together. You can have substitutes who would step in if something happens to your attorney. It's designed to be flexible in the same way as a will would be in terms of how it would be organised. But it's about whilst you're alive and how things are managed up to the point when you pass away.
Yes. It's like making a will, isn't it? People, you know, you feel, I don't want to do it really. I'd rather go out for a meal rather than make a will.
I think going to see a solicitor is probably like going to see a dentist.
but more painful.
And about as popular, yes, absolutely. But the truth of it is that a lot of these tools are there for people to access and use. But if you don't, then the law only has limited ways in which it helps you. And usually they take more effort and are more difficult often for people to deal with. To take capacity as an issue, if you don't have a lasting power of attorney in place, say for finance, if you lose capacity, your assets are frozen. So nobody can access your bank accounts or deal with your pensions or deal with your property because it's not theirs. The law won't let anybody else touch those things, quite rightly. But that leaves a problem because that also means that your care can't be paid for. Nobody can stop your pension piling up in a place that's inaccessible.
Right.
Your life gets suspended. The only way you can deal with that without a power of attorney is by somebody applying to the court and asking the court to appoint somebody. Mm. But those kind of applications are much more complicated, much more expensive, and take much longer to do. And you can't start until somebody loses capacity when you've already got the problem.
Yeah.
And it may be 10, 12 months before you get the court
order. The clock's already ticking, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the idea of a power of attorney is to try and give people a way to appoint people in advance, to get ahead of the issue as a planning issue, really, but also to have the choice about who those people should be, to have discussions with them at a point when they're being appointed, knowing that they're happy to do the job, and you can discuss the non-directly financial things in life which you want them to take account of, but to help them understand your life and what you might want them to deal with and how you'd want them to deal with it. So it gives people a much greater say in quite how things might be dealt with after they can't themselves.
What would a kind of a simple will be to draw up?
So for us at Finglass Hill, for an individual to make a simple will, which the vast majority are, is £200 plus VAT, which is a fixed cost. Whether we're seeing people in the office, whether we see people at home, which we do.
So you'd visit people at home if they're unable to get to the office, would you?
Absolutely, yeah. It's something we do. We have, obviously, a number of clients who have mobility issues or reasons why they can't easily come to the office, so we'll go see them. And the cost is the same either way. If it's a couple making a will, then it'll be £300 plus VAT because we can cover a lot of the same ground in the same meetings. For things which are more complex, which would be inheritance tax planning or more complex trusts, then again, that's something we'd have to assess case by case. But again, a lot of those cases end up being fixed costs. In any case, that's something we discuss and agree with somebody before we did any work, so people knew exactly what they were getting into and it was something they wanted to proceed with.
So can you help with things like inheritance tax planning and all this sort of thing? And
yes, it's becoming increasingly relevant, I think, to people as inheritance tax allowances have been frozen for an awful long time. That's deliberate because that means the government makes more money. That's one way of raising tax. But as things like property prices have increased, then that's drawn more people into the inheritance tax net. It's always kind of been seen as a problem for London and the South East with property prices, but that's no longer the case. And there are plenty of places in Calderdale where, you know, there are potential inheritance tax problems just because assets have grown almost without you noticing, because it's not money you're going to spend, it might be a house. But when you actually look at the issue on paper, it can be bigger for people than they realise.
Thank you. Finglass Hill have been helpful to a number of our members in recent months. Whilst we can't sort of recommend anybody, should anybody require further advice on some of the topics we've talked about, how can they contact you?
Yes, well, obviously we've got all the usual phone calls you can make. We've got emails, we've got a contact page on our website, or you can call in the office if you're passing.
Right. So your number?
So the number for us is 01422 33 0000.
And what about if somebody just wants a little bit of advice? You know, they want to dip their toe in the water. They've thought about making a will, but, you know, do you give, like, 10 minutes of advice? Well, yeah, we'll come and see you or whatever.
Yeah, this happens more than you might think. We have a number of situations where people don't quite understand what their issues are, don't understand what help they might need. And we do offer effectively like a diagnostic meeting, a chance just to have a chat, work through where somebody's issues are and try and understand what help they may need. Usually like a half hour free appointment with no obligation. And that's something which we do. We have to be careful just how much we do that because I've got only so much time to spare. But we do try and help people as much as we can. And often it's just trying to help people understand what opportunities they've got to deal with problems they have.
Yeah.
Or to properly understand perhaps what the problem really is and what they might need to do about it. So we do that. And that's something which is a regular feature of my working day.
Thank you very much for coming along to see us today at Southgate. You're probably one of the first visitors we've had in our new premises.
And very impressive they are too. I'm very pleased to see what you've done with it.
I hope you'll come along when it's all up and running.
Definitely.
So thank you very much for your time today.
No, thank you. Thanks very much.